Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition wherever you get your podcasts.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Welcome back to another episode of this wonderful show. I've decided it's wonderful. That's right, it's Star Trek the Pod Directive, the official Star Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tony Newsome.
I am the other of your hosts, Paul F. Tompkins, and I co-sign that this show is wonderful.
Thank you. If we didn't like it, what hope is there?
Good point. It starts with us.
Exactly, and it ends with us, because if it's bad, it's our fault.
Also, we come back at the end. So
that's true.
In many ways, it starts and ends with us.
Well, this episode is a little different. The structure is a little different. We don't just come back at the end. We're here the whole time.
What's happening?
I'm just trying to set up that this one's a little different. Get off my back, Paul. You got a better way to do it?
Look, I got on your back because you promised me you would take me across the river. And you swore that you wouldn't sting me.
You have to learn to swim one of these days, Paul.
Wait, I made myself both the frog and the scorpion in that analogy. I apologize. I apologize to all frogs and scorpions.
And we apologize to you because we are neither frogs nor scorpions, and neither is our guest, Queen of the Segway.
That's right. Perfect segue.
Our guest today, we are so excited. This is such a special, different style episode because we are here with a person who is largely responsible for so much of what I love about Star Trek. We are here with our friend and boss. Is that a weird way to say? Alex Kurtzman. You know him. He's a film and television writer, producer, director. He is best known for co-producing the Star Trek franchise since 2009, co-writing the scripts to Transformers in 2007, Star Trek 2009, Star Trek Into Darkness, my favorite one, and the amazing Spider-Man in 2014 with his writing and producing partner, Robert Orci. In 2018, Kurtzman signed a new 5-year deal with CBS Television Studios to oversee and expand the Star Trek franchise on television, including serving as executive producer on Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek Short Treks, Star Trek Picard, and Star Trek Lower Decks, Star Trek, Star Trek. Hi, Alex. Welcome.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Really good. Thank you so much for joining us from far away.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm jealous of Paul's chair. It looks super comfy.
Honestly, this chair was a pre-pandemic purchase that I thought, oh, I've made a mistake. This chair's dimensions are way too big for this tiny room that I'm in. But then all it took was a global pandemic for this chair to become MVP for me.
Your best friend, yes. And your shining pillow, absolutely, which I'm very, very impressed by.
<Thank you>. So, Alex, you've overseen so many different huge properties, including Star Trek films. But when it came to expanding the universe via TV, did that feel like a different weight? Did that have like a denser weight to it than like doing a movie here or there?
It was different in that I think there was a different kind of expectation on a series that obviously Star Trek's roots are in television. So going back to the first television show that I think had been about 12 years since the last one was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And there was obviously a tremendous amount of expectation on what it was going to be. And so it was nerve-wracking. But I think because I had had the experience of doing the 2009 Star Trek and starting over, when again there was a lot of expectation, it primed me in some way to be ready to do it.
Yeah.
But the truth is it's always nerve-wracking. And it should always be nerve-wracking because it's just a big responsibility, and there's it involves a great armies of people who have to move in many, many directions at the same time.
So
it's been unbelievably joyful and fulfilling in ways that honestly I could never have predicted at the outset.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Did you expect it to be like this? Has it been surprising
No.
for you?
No. It's been amazingly surprising for me. First of all, I don't know how it's me. I don't know how I became the person who's doing this. Like that was not at all what I had imagined. But when we made Discovery was really just, let's just make a great Star Trek television show and hopefully not mess it up. It was not, hey, let's build an entire Star Trek universe. Mm. And it was right after the show and the way that the show was well received. And I spent a lot of time talking or just observing that it felt like Star Trek is this amazing property that's existed for over 55 years. but people didn't quite know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And it sort of fell into my lap at two different pivot points. But in the second pivot point, which was the discovery pivot point, I was seeing that the world was beginning to change in ways that were making Star Trek even more relevant and more important. More important being the more significant word of those two things. And it seemed like, wow, there's this incredible opportunity to build this thing out because people respond to it so deeply and have for so long that I don't think you guys are actually taking it full advantage of the kinds of stories that we can tell. Mm-hmm. Thus, a bunch of other shows were born over the course of 3.5 years. But yeah, no, I did not set, it was definitely not part of the plan with Discovery.
That's so cool. What was your first contact with Star Trek?
My first contact with Trek was, I had a friend in elementary school named David Pang, and his dad was, he worked at JPL.
Wow.
And so when I would go over to his house, his family would watch Star Trek. And I remember, and I don't think I understood at the time, but now I understand that people who actually invent things that go into space really love Star Trek.
Yeah.
Right? And so like the people who actually do that work are massively inspired by Trek. And that was my first sort of subliminal, you know, connection to it. And then the second is Wrath of Khan, which I saw when I was little in the theater. And, you know, everybody talks about the earwig, which, you know, the SETI eel, which is obviously Paul and Amy talked about it a lot. But, you know, that's just, if you're a child, like that will brand itself on your brain, 100%. You know, literally and figuratively. Yeah. And it was so emotional. Mm-hmm. And that was not something that I think I understood Star Trek to be conceptually at the time. And yet now I understand, of course it was, and it was so for so many people, but I did not grow up when Star Trek was originally on the air, right? When I was watching it, it was in reruns. And I was blown away. And then I was also blown away by the fact that, you know, my reference for villains at that point was Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. And then here comes Khan, who is terrifying. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, there's like a new gold standard in bad guys here. So that was a real shift for me.
Sure. Yeah, it's surprising to me, not surprising, but it is great how scientific Trek is, and it would seem so cerebral and left brain. But what that is this incredible Trojan horse for these beautiful, heartfelt human stories. And
absolutely.
I think that's why I got like a million more like engineer scientist followers on Twitter when Lower Decks premiered. And I was like, oh, cool. All these like people who work at NASA and JPL, they love Trek. That makes so much sense.
Totally. Totally. And you're out there living their fantasy, you know, like, and it's an amazing thing.
Yeah. It's interesting how in the world of Trek specifically, like the scientist is valued mm-hmm. in a way that it's not in a lot of other sci-fi even, where it's like, we're all scientists on this floating ship and we're trying to learn things, you know, we're trying to build things, learn things. I could see why that people that do that in real life are drawn to it. It's like, oh, I'm the hero now for a change.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, it really is singularly defines Trek is that science is the solution to the problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
It's always the combination of science and humanity, mm-hmm. like, you know, taking a humane approach and understanding where the intersection is between those two things. And then on top of which, the bridge crew, who everybody sort of associates with as a family, has to work together using their different, all their different skill sets mm-hmm. to solve a problem with both science and empathy. And I think that's Star Trek.
Absolutely. So Short Treks brought the first mini-sodes into the Trek universe. And Lower Decks is arguably the first out-and-out intentional all-the-time comedy. I like to say intentional comedy because there's plenty of comedy episodes that maybe didn't think they were at the time. So those are like definite innovations to the brand. What brought about the decision to go in those directions? And are there more innovations like that coming?
I certainly want to say that I hope there's more innovations like that coming. It's funny, challenges usually present themselves as opportunities to build new things, right? So we finished season one of Discovery, which I don't know how you may or may not remember, but they had originally announced a date for the drop of Discovery that was like, oh, it'll be like any other television show to make and we'll just drop it on this date. And we were like, guys, I don't think it's going to be that simple. And then when we vastly, vastly didn't meet that date, like well in advance, we said, we don't want to make that mistake twice. Mm-hmm. Guys, you should give us the time to prep the shows and visual effect. I mean, you have to understand it takes 8 months, let's say, to write and prep. 8 months to a year to write and prep and build the stages.
Yeah.
Then it takes another 8 months to shoot it. And then it takes another 8 months to a year to post it. Wow. So, announcing like, oh yeah, it'll be just like, you know, every 6 months there'll be a new trend. It's not possible. It's literally not possible. You have to plan 2 years out. So when I said to them, we're not going to be able to deliver you the second season the way you, in the timeline you want, they said, well, what can you do? I said, well, why don't we use our sets and try something new and do short treks? And they ended up being so delightful because there were these, you know, wonderful little O. Henry stories. And as a writer, it gave us an opportunity to say, how much story can you tell in an incredibly short period of time, right? How do you do a beginning, middle, and end in somewhere between, I think the shortest one is something like 5.5 minutes to 14 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And what a great opportunity. But the other great opportunity is we get to try out new directors and we get to try out new writers and not necessarily people who had even directed before. So it became this wonderful incubation sort of place for new talent, which was great. And also, I think that in the same way that, you know, this is a weird analogy, but what do people remember most about the first Avengers? Like, or why do you watch that? Well, yeah, there's a lot of great special effects, but what you remember is them eating shawarma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what you remember. You remember those scenes where it's like, oh, they were like us and like they were just... And that's what the short treks allowed us, was all the scenes you don't have time for in the episode proper, you actually get to tell that story now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was really, really wonderful.
I think it was Matt Fraction, who's a comic book writer, who had done the Avengers for a while. And his advice to whoever was taking over for him was, don't forget to have scenes of them making sandwiches in the kitchen. Because that stuff, it means so much. And what I think is... what's really cool about short treks, and in addition to the films, which are in addition to the series, is that you don't have to watch these ancillary things to follow what's going on in the series. But if you do watch them, it gives such a depth to the characters and their world, and it's so rewarding. You know, it's so rewarding because you just have in the films ironically in the short treks, you have so much room to deal with emotion and character and, you know, what people are thinking, as opposed to we have this urgent thing that we have to do right now, you know, which is most of the hour longs, you know. So it's a really it makes me excited to see what is going to be the next innovation in that way that will add to the world, but still keep the you know, I just watched the show and that's it, viewer happy.
Musicals. Is
the next. Oh, by the way, nothing would make me happier. I've thought about this, and if we ever did a short trek, that would be the perfect format for it. The thing is, if you're gonna do a musical, it would have to be as brilliant as Once More with Feeling from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right? Which, if you remember that episode, like, it, you know, the demon. So it has to have a concept that makes a musical necessary, or you have to come up with a really, really good reason for people to start breaking out in song, right? And and we have yet to really explore that, but nothing would make me happier. Like, I would die to see that.
Sure. I mean, you keep casting musicians in all the shows, so it feels like subconsciously we can tell this is what you want, and we are waiting in the wings and we're ready.
Okay. All right.
So with Lower Decks, I know that Mike has been on the show last season, Mike McMahon, and he talked about you know, his plan to kind of... it sounds like what you mentioned with short treks is like the freedom to focus on the smaller stories. And that is what Mike does a lot with Lower Decks, is that it's the chance to focus on the B story and to flip the traditional kind of TNG vibe and to focus on the Data and Joe Piscopo style story versus the giant universe problem story. Was that your intention when you brought Mike on? Were you like, this is what I want to do? Or did you kind of follow his lead?
I followed his lead, and I will always follow his lead.
Me too.
So I know he's the greatest. He's just a massively brilliant, wonderful, like, open heart of a human. So Aaron Byers, who works with me at Secret Hideout, was very close with Mike from their assistant days. And he knew about Mike's TNG, you know, fake TNG season Twitter book. And he said, you should meet with Mike because Mike has this idea for the show. And I was like, great, you know, and I'm always looking, as you guys are saying, like, I'm always looking for what's a new version of it that doesn't feel like the thing you've seen already and yet is also entirely familiar, right? And he came in, and I've said this before, but he came in and pitched, like, I want to do a show about the people who put the yellow cartridge into the replicator so the banana comes out the other. And I stopped and I was like, we're doing that show.
Yeah.
Like, that's for sure happening. Like, that's the perfect show. But what was very clear and what Mike emphasized right out of the gate is that he did not want to punch down on Star Trek.
Yeah.
And Star Trek is very easy to punch down on and easy to sort of turn your nose up at. And it was really, really clear that, you know, Galaxy Quest, for example, which I think is probably the best Star Trek movie ever made, it is brilliant because it laughs with Star Trek, but it doesn't laugh at Star Trek. And ultimately, it's totally reverent of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. It was clear that that's what Mike wanted to do. He was like, I live and breathe Star Trek. I love these people. And I want to write this relationship, you know, clearly he and Mariner and her mom, and it was coming from a very honest emotional place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a comedy person. You guys are comedy people, but it does seem to me like the comedy that works the best is the one that comes from some emotional reality.
Yeah.
And so the minute he left the office, I was like, I'm going to follow that guy anywhere. And to the extent that we've given him notes, it's really only to ask questions about what's the intention of this or that. It's never to be like, we don't like this or we think it should be a different show. It's always been and will always be the show Mike wants to make.
Yeah,
that comes through when we record too. It definitely feels like Mike gets to do what he wants because he has such love for it and he's got such a deep well of knowledge of it, including all the folks in the writer's room. I was so...
Yeah.
It's been so cool to meet some of the writers and be like, oh, you just absolutely love Star Trek and you're a comedian. So this is the best job you could have?
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, like a dream job for any, I mean, just incredible. And he's such a nice person, right? So he creates an environment where everyone's happy and that's the ball game right there.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned the episode we did with Paul Scheer and Amy Nicholson when we talked about Wrath of Khan. One of the things that they really, you know, that we kind of hammered home in that episode that they brought up is that Trek kind of doesn't get the love that it should award-wise. Like, Wrath of Khan should have many, many, many awards.
Yes.
And when I found out that there are not actors that have won Emmys for role, I was like, but Patrick Stewart, though? But Whoopi Goldberg,
right.
though?
Yeah.
But Gates?
Yeah.
No one? That's insane. Do you think it's because people think of science fiction as like something easy to do or something different?
I do. I honestly do. I think that there's this very strange institutional bias about not just science fiction, but Star Trek in particular. And my guess would be that because it used to be perceived by the mainstream as camp, it never actually got past the perception that there's so much more going on in it than what people initially imagined who were not necessarily Trekkies or Trekkers or however you want to self-identify. And as a result, people don't see the enormous amounts of talent that come through the door. And also, it is hard to write Star Trek.
Yeah.
Right? The trick is to make it look easy, as is the trick with all of our jobs for anything.
Yeah.
It is unbelievably hard to write Star Trek because you have to be a drama writer. You have to be a science fiction writer. You have to be an action writer. You have to be a science writer. You have to be a comedy writer. You have to be, above and beyond everything, a writer of human beings and human emotions. And that is really a tall order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, most people can maybe do one of those things sort of well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a weird like bias against it. I also don't think that people understand the depth of talent when it comes to things like costumes, you know, or visual effects.
Yeah.
I mean, I would put our visual effects up against Marvel any day. I mean, you know, 8 months of render on visual effects is a big deal.
Yeah.
It takes a long time. I think people also somehow don't understand that the best science fiction isn't about the future. It's actually allegory that's about right now.
Yeah.
And some things slip through the cracks, like Handmaid's Tale, which you could argue is science fiction or not, right? It doesn't feel like science fiction now, but when it was written, you know, it certainly was, gets a lot of Emmy love. But to me, there's really no difference between that and other science fiction shows that have to do with commentary on who we are as a species, on the choices that we're making, on what our future is going to look like if we continue down certain roads. And that's what science fiction does better than any genre.
Yes.
That is the point of science fiction.
Yes.
And somehow I think like there's a snootiness about that is unfortunate, but I think it's also starting to change.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my first job was on Hercules and Xena, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, at the time, people looked down their nose at that show, and now we're at Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah.
It's just time. Like, time catches up with everything.
Yeah.
So I have to believe that people will find it and see it in a different way.
I hope so. I mean, I think that genre stuff tends to be overlooked because I think people have an idea that it's not quote unquote serious. And that
yeah.
if you enjoy something too much, that it's not worthy of a trophy. Because
right.
you know, if something makes you feel bad, then that must be that must be the best
right.
it can get.
Right.
You know?
Totally. That's right.
Yeah, we love a trauma porn for sure.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. And there's so much of it. And half the time you see that the trauma porn gets the awards and you're like, yeah. you know what? It was very dramatic, but was it great?
No.
I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, like, you mentioned Handmaid's Tale. I love Handmaid's Tale, but it's like, did we really just need a bunch of white women to teach people about slavery? Like yeah. we have.
Right.
We could learn
right.
about slavery though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well said. That's exactly right.
I also love that people will always win Oscars for playing a famous person.
Yes.
It's like, it doesn't matter how good the movie is. It's just like, hey, you put some rubber on your face.
Some makeup
like how is that different than science fiction?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
that's exactly right.
Yeah. Speaking of the makeup, there have been a lot of great awards for our effects artists and yeah. makeup and things like that. Well-deserved. And mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, you mentioned the effects. I recently rewatched Star Trek 2009 and I was like, those effects are insane. That's 11 years old. What year is it? 12 years old.
Yeah.
And it's still
yeah, it's
holds
been
up.
A long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think those things hold up when the story is firing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? When you're just emotionally engaged and frankly, expectation for Star Trek was so low when we made that film that I think we just surprised people with something that was a true love letter to just how amazing Star Trek is. And and I think it also took people back, and this was very much the intention. And it was, you know, every once in a while you make something where you're like, I did what I set out to do, and it actually landed the way we set. You know, that almost never happens, but that
yeah.
was definitely one where it did. And I think one of the intentions that we had, and certainly JJ had as a director, was like, I want to make you feel what you felt when you were a kid, when you were sitting in the theater watching.
Yeah,
you know, not just these films, but films like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
When you take a thing like that with any huge production that you're about to launch, a movie, put a movie in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
There's, of course, like the moment before it actually gets released and people are seeing it for the first time. There's
sure.
like a sort of fingers crossed, you know, feeling. But how with rebooting, you know, a beloved story like that, did it feel, this is like the first question I asked, did it feel like an extra little twinge of like, oh man, we could have gotten this completely wrong.
Yeah, we don't want to break it.
Oh my God, yes, absolutely. But you know, there was a funny thing that happened that I think gave us a tremendous amount of confidence, which, and I really have to say it was all about Leonard, all
mm-hmm.
about Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
And we knew when we came up with the story, and when I say we, there were a lot of people involved in that. It wasn't just me and Bob. It was JJ. It was Damon Lindelof. It was Brian Burke. And we were sort of this band of brothers who was trying to not screw it up.
Yeah.
And we all had extremely different relationships to Star Trek. You know, some of us diehards, I was not at the time, others casual watchers, and others actually very objectively, like, I'm not a huge Star Trek fan, but I'm curious because I see the potential, right? And that was kind of a weird, perfect Supreme Court of people because there were so many different points of view on what it was. And yet we all wanted it to be the same one thing.
Yeah.
And when we came on the idea of, well, we actually need to flip, we need to create a new timeline so that, and that absolutely came out of, well, we know that, you know, Malcolm McDowell dropped a boulder on William Shatner and that seems lame. And so if we're going to start over, like we don't want to know that that's how it ends. Right. So we have to change everybody's fate. And once you change everybody's fate, anything can happen.
Yeah.
And you can't predict what's coming. And that led us to the destruction of Vulcan. And then we were like, if we do that, the only way that's going to work is if it's blessed by Leonard Nimoy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this, you know, I will never forget. Leonard became somebody that we loved very dearly. And he ended up actually on our show Fringe afterwards. But he came into the office and there were very little pleasantries, right? It was like, hey, hi, it's so nice to meet you. And he's like, and he kind of was like, what do you got? And we were like, okay, we have to pitch for our lives here. And so we sat down and we pitched everything. And he was totally stone-faced. And we finished and we're like, okay, so what do you think? And he didn't say anything. And my first thought was, we've totally screwed it up.
Right.
Like, he's out. You know, we just pitched him, oh, we're going to destroy your whole planet. And and then he said, you must understand, this is very emotional for me. Mm-hmm. And I heard this thing in his voice. And in that moment, I was like, we got him.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we got him because I think he understood. He came in, as he should have, incredibly skeptical. Who are these guys? Sure. What are they doing with Star Trek? Like, are they going to screw it up? What are they asking of me? I wrote a book called I Am Not Spock. So if I'm coming back, it better be for the greatest reason of all time.
Yeah.
And I think what he saw was that we were genuine fans who just wanted to do right by it. And I think he saw his opportunity to help contribute to what has always been so amazing about Star Trek, which is the fans keep it alive again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But it has to go through a process of rebirth, you know, every, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years by whatever the next generation of storytellers is, because Star Trek has always been this amazing reflection of the time that we live in. And the only way that that works is if people who are coming up behind and behind and behind keep telling new stories.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of how I see it.
Do you think that Star Trek will ever return to network television? And do you think that it should or shouldn't?
It's so hard to answer that question because we now live in the streaming age where the expectation is significant in terms of scope. And as the line between movies and television seems to have evaporated, we could not produce these shows on a network budget.
Mm-hmm.
It just would be impossible. So you would have to come up, which doesn't mean it can't be done. It just means that the story has to be built in such a way where you wouldn't be going, oh God, I feel like I'm not getting what I should. It has to be specifically best told on network television, right? Mm-hmm. In the same way that there are certain stories that are best told in 2 hours in a film and certain stories that are best told over, you know, 7 to 12 years of serialized storytelling. And so it's just really what's at the emotional core and what is the built-in longevity of a particular kind of story and where does it best fit? So I would never dismiss it, but I would be very vigilant about making sure that it was necessary on television and not just another show that we could do there.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because it's really tough. Like, you know, when you look back at, let's say, TNG, they had to do, what, 26 episodes a season or something?
Yeah, and which it's like inconceivable
at this point. It's so much to ask and to keep the creativity at a level that you want it to be at, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, and you add into it all the post-production, the special effects, all that stuff, it's such a tall order that the streaming platforms now with shorter seasons allow for, you know, just more, I think, better storytelling that's more concise if that's what you're looking to do, you know?
That's probably why so many of those TNG episodes were like, okay, there's a spore that's going to get in Picard's head and he's going to be a different guy instead of hiring like 20 more guest actors, no makeup.
Yeah.
It's just like,
of course.
It becomes like a bottle episode on the bridge with them all playing weird characters.
Of course, even with, you know, 8 to 10 episodes, you're still like, all right, how do we use our characters and not bring in new people? And, you know, unless it's totally necessary. I mean, it's just part of it. I mean, honestly, my hat's off to anyone who wrote 26 episodes of, you know, especially in that window of time where there were three Star Trek shows on the air and all of them were at that length.
You know, we talked before about people maybe not understanding sci-fi or having a thought about Star Trek that it's not for them. What would you pitch to those people? Like, what's your pitch for Star Trek for people who don't think it's for them?
I would say that in this particular moment in time where everyone is rethinking a lot of the assumptions that they made about the world and the systems that are in place in the world, Star Trek speaks to those in a way that I think no other franchise does. And it's always been incredibly relevant, but it's really relevant now.
Yeah.
And we have such amazing storytellers telling these stories. But there's this misconception that it's just about, you have to know technobabble, or I have to know 50 plus years of, you know, to be able to drop in. And the truth is that, like the short treks, as in what you were saying about the short treks, if you have seen 50 plus years of television, then you're going to have one experience with these shows, right? It'll be informed by that. But if you've seen none of them, you should be able to drop into these shows and have a great time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I think that the shows are, some of them are roller coaster rides. Some of them are more meditative. Some of them are hilarious. Some of them are interesting explorations of the state of humanity. And some of them are just about the pure joy of seeing the world through the eyes of children. In my mind, the thing that's beautiful about Star Trek and about where we are with it right now is I always use the crayon analogy where I say, like, our show, or the universe rather, wants to be different color crayons in the same box, right? The same box being it's identifiably a thing that you understand. There's a common thread between all of these things. But if all the shows are the same, we're failing, right? Like, that's why a show like Lower Decks can exist, because you need a different flavor in the mix, right? And Lower Decks gets to occupy its own really special space that no other show does.
Yeah.
And, you know, and one of the things I loved most about seeing what happened with over Lower Decks is that, of course, fans are like, wait a minute, straight up comedy. Like, sure. no, we don't. And by the end of season one, they were like, oh my God, this is made by people who love Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And these are actually really Star Trek episodes, but it's just a different take on it. And the fact that all of those different things can exist in the same universe is so exciting. And I would also say that if the craftsmanship on our shows, again, like all of these people who build these amazing worlds.
Yeah.
That's the same, you know, when you watch a show like Thrones or when you, you know, anything that's, I think what Marvel is doing right now is amazing. I love the shows that they're making. Those are massive world builds that require huge swaths of people, great artists to come together and create a vision like that. And I think we have that too. And so my hope is that this sort of misnomer that Trek is only for people who know Trek, that the whole point is, yes, of course it's for those people, right? Those people first and foremost, but it's also for people who have never seen it and don't know anything about it. Because if we don't also get those people in, then 10 years, 20 years from now, we're not going to have new generations of Star Trek fans, right? And that's the beauty of, I think, being able to create this universe is where Star Trek should be around. It's about such great things. It brings people so much joy.
Yeah.
And it makes you think about the world and about your place in the world and in your place in the future of our planet in a way that's so extraordinary that I would like to think that people around the world would want to support that, because it just brings good to the planet.
I agree. I've always felt that. And I love that it is, the overall mission is about peace and exploration for Starfleet and for the Federation. Mm-hmm. So what a beautiful thing to have at the core of a giant, you know, decade spanning franchise, as opposed to it being conflict and war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We solve our problems with diplomacy and negotiation, right? And war sometimes, but
yeah,
I think you want to give, especially given the state of the world as it's been, no matter what side of the political line you're on, nobody can disagree with the fact that, you know, we are as close to a civil war as we've ever been since the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And this show gives you a roadmap to the possibility and the potential of human beings and what we can accomplish if we stop thinking the way we've been thinking. Because if we keep thinking this way, we're not going to be around.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of Star Trek, is it actually gives you a positive for the future.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Alex, is there anything that you haven't, any property that you haven't done yet that you would love to get your hands on?
God, that's a really interesting question. I mean, the truth is, like, I don't think I select, like, going into a property based on there has to be an emotional wellspring there for me. Like, something that I really, really go, oh, I see the potential in this, and it has something to do with it having affected me as a kid.
Yeah,
in some way.
Yeah.
But also, I think, here's the reality, whether we like it or not, and the internet can complain about it as much as they want, but it's a truism, which is that all these companies now are much more inclined to create a reboot than they are to create something original, right? So if that's the case, and that's what we as writers and creators are often faced with, then the challenge now, you can either complain about it, or you can say, how do I reboot something so that it actually goes into new original territory?
Yeah.
Right? How does it serve the same function? Not how do I just repeat the old thing again, but how do I build it into something that's really special?
Right.
And feels like it's forging new ground. And I think that a lot of the franchises that have been successful, they have actually been doing that.
Yeah.
You know, they've taken things that are wildly familiar and they sort of twist it in a way. And so, and I do think that in a funny way, that is one of the special sauces to the success of Star Trek, is that you have to provide something that's totally familiar and something that's totally unexpected at the same time.
Yeah, to build excitement.
So that's not really an answer to your question.
No, but absolutely it is. Sure it is.
Yeah, I like that.
On a somewhat related topic, do you think eventually everyone will have played Batman?
Well, are you going to play Batman? Ooh.
I mean, I have no plans to, but the way things are going, I feel like everyone will get a turn eventually.
Right. You're just going to take your ticket and wait in line. By the way, here's the thing. I want to see you in Batman. I'm so paying for that.
I want to see you in
Batman. By the way, that's what they should do now. They should just scrap whatever plans they have.
Yeah. Get Paul. Yeah. Campaign for Paul to play Batman.
Absolutely.
That's what this pod was for.
Yes.
The first Batman who's not in shape. We've finally broken that glass ceiling.
You don't need to be in shape.
Who says Batman has to be in shape?
Exactly.
That's
bullshit.
No, you have gadgets. Yeah. You have gadgets.
Totally.
Why does he have the gadgets, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, the gadgets can do the job. He doesn't even have to move.
Yes.
He could sit in a big
chair.
Stay in
the car.
Totally. Yes.
A nice big chair.
I have one last question for Alex. I'm sure you've been asked this a lot. What would your job be in Starfleet?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Are you on the bridge? Maybe you're not in Starfleet. Maybe you're on some
I don't know if I'm competent enough to be on the bridge. I'm not sure I would want that. I wouldn't mind Guinan's job.
Yeah.
I could probably be pretty good at that.
I identify with that too.
Like listen to people talk all day long. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like intuit what's really going on with them occasionally. Yep. Yeah. No, I think I'd be probably better at that. Although I only know how to make two drinks, so that's not really...
Is one of them the disappearing one?
No. I would love to... That would be really cool. No.
Okay. I would be a Guinan too. I say it's because I'm not good with authority, so I don't think I could be in any sort of Starfleet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for talking to us about all things Trek. We really appreciate
Thank you guys.
Giving us your time today.
Oh, thanks, guys. You're the best.
Absolutely. All right.
Thanks so much.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
LLAP.